Techtopia. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Når jeg står og kigger ud af mit vindue her i min lejlighed, hvor jeg har boet i 25 år her i København, ja, så tænker jeg på, hvordan ser verden egentlig anderledes ud, end den gjorde for 25 år siden? Fordi den her gade, den ligner temmelig meget sig selv, som den har set ud de sidste måske 50 år. Der er blevet lavet lidt om på cykelstier og fortog, men ellers så er den ret meget sig selv. En af de afgørende forskelle er folk, der går rundt på gaden og glor ned i deres smartphones, og så er der i øvrigt også voksne mennesker, der står på elektriske løbehjul. Men ellers så kunne det her principielt lige så godt være 1996 eller 1976, ja måske endda 1956. Men hvis vi nu kigger tilbage til 1996, hvor jeg flyttede ind her i den her ejendom, så kan jeg jo kigge på min væg og se, jamen nu har jeg jo en antenne siddende i min stikkontakt, så jeg har noget wifi. I min reol, der står en bog om data, der er sket noget med data og internettet, og de der telefoner, vi render rundt og glor ned i. Men bor jeg egentlig i den der science fiction drøm, som folk skrev om for 25 år siden, da jeg flyttede ind her? Eller bor jeg i virkeligheden i et ganske gammeldags samfund med science fiction elementer som flyvende biler og folk, der vil rejse til Mars og noget internet, som man ikke rigtig kan se, men i høj grad er påvirket af? Det spørgsmål, det stillede jeg til den svensk-israelske futurist Ari Dromi, som jeg hørte på konferencen Kort Dag for nogle måneder siden. Han var nemlig meget optaget af at fortælle om, at vi lever i en science fiction-verden, men at vi ikke helt har forstået, hvad det betyder. Vi kan se og bruge en masse teknologier, men vi forstår ikke helt, hvordan de her teknologier de påvirker samfundet og fortællingen om os som mennesker og fortællingen om vores samfund og den måde, det udvikler sig på.
My name is Arik Dromi. I work as a futurologist. I run two organizations today. One of them is called the Dead Rabbit Society, which is an organization that is producing documentaries, events, and content to help people to challenge the status quo in various areas, from political to industry to infrastructure and so on. I'm also founded an organization called Department of the Future, which is a very egoistic type of consultancy company that we cherry pick projects that we know that can deliver impact.
You talked a bit about science fiction, and you said that today we're living in sort of a society where technology, which was science fiction when you were a kid, has become reality.
Absolutely. I think a lot of what we consider science fiction is part of our reality today. And a lot of the things that science fiction didn't predict are part of our reality. I think, like, if you try to think about the internet, it was never predicted by science fiction, but it's still part of our reality, and it's drove a lot of other innovation that we grew up on. If it's, you know, the first time I thought about flying cars was when I listened to audiobook on a record on an LP, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That's the first time I came to, and she wasn't just a flying car, she was also a cognitive machine that can relate to human on emotional level. Flying cars are part of our reality. Prosthetic limb, smart implants, brain implants. You have a bunch of ideas that were written about, you know, way prior to the 80s that makes our reality frictionless every day. And some of them actually creating a lot of frictions as we are not implementing them right. But the simple fact is, it's not about, you know, science fiction technology anymore. We should stop talking about that and start understand how it impacts our society. We need to go back and read the same books and not focus on the technology and focus on the narrative and the societal changes that were the main story. And I think that's something we don't do today as society.
Which is actually my next question, because you can always state that we live in a society where technology is sort of like what we consider to be science fiction 20 or 50 years ago. But a lot of the science fiction literature is actually about society and how technology is changing society. So do we live in a science fiction society, or do we live in an old-fashioned society with science fiction technology?
It's a very complex question, and you know, people ask me if we live in a euphoric reality or dystopian reality, and I think it's a mixture between the two of them. One of the key messages I have is that we are often, you know, led by blind leaders who are blind to our own blindness. We do have a set of leadership, both in the political arena and the industrial arena, that are very, very old-fashioned, and they are blind to the impacts of technology, of science fiction, so-called science fiction technology, on our lives. But we do have a set of, you know, the young generations that is trying to fully adopt the implications of this type of technology. We're in a very risky place with our societal structure, as we don't have a vision, we don't have a common vision of how we would like society to look like in the future. Building a wall is not a vision. I'm sorry about that. It's just to, you know, China has a wall, so, you know, Trump won the wall as well. I listened this morning to Donald Tusk says, like, Brexit will be the real fall of the British Empire. That is a very, very kid-like statement for the president of the European Parliament to say. He doesn't really see, he doesn't have the vision of what, you know, what actually caused Brexit to start with. We are very occupied on speed and capacity. And that's what we are doing with technology, speed and capacity. You need a faster processor. You need a better screen resolution so you can stream your video faster. But it's the same videos that you watched on, you know, VHS cassettes. It's the same crappy content. And I think that's the danger of what we have with technology today. It's maybe changed the way we do things, but it doesn't change what we do. And we don't have leadership that can actually use this technology to start changing what we do things. And when we do it, when we change the what, we have new narratives. And when we have new narratives, we can literally cross the Rubicon and take control of our own future.
You had an example in your talk about, you were talking to a Swedish politician, I think, about the computer game Fortnite.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not going to mention names, but when I talked to some representative from the Swedish government, my claim was that we don't have the tools as a society to understand the implication, the economic implication of technology when it's hitting millions of users in less than 1 month. And I used the example of Fortnite when, you know, there was a publication saying that half of the children last summer, summer of 2018, played Fortnite during the summer. And, in, you know, Fortnite did $3 billion in 2018. So what is the economic impact of half of the kids playing Fortnite? And I ask, what is, you know, could you harness that to increase the GDP of the cities in Sweden? And we started, this is how I started the discussion. What is the impact? And the comment I got is, what is Fortnite? And I think that is a very dangerous statement when we have, and that was, you know, we have a set of leaders that are so disconnected from interaction models that can drive the economic infrastructure to a whole new level. I don't like to be in that place.
But you, now you mentioned GDP. If you look at a lot of the so-called exponential technologies that we have today, they do have an influence on GDP, and sometimes they might have an influence which makes GDP smaller.
I think in most times they make the GDP smaller, to be honest. And it's again, there is a big disconnect between society, which holds the interaction and repurposing, policymaking, and industry, which is the business. I do think there is a massive disconnect between the three of them. They are not brought together in order to really rethink the value-driven systems that we live in. I personally believe, and the team I work with, is that we calculate GDP on formulas that were developed in the 60s and haven't evolved since then. We don't capture a lot of the future growth potential of GDP through understanding how people repurposing digital assets. I see economy in the context of value rather than money, because I think value holds much greater promise than money. Money can be one value, but if you fold money into the only value, then you don't have any other place to grow into. And in, like you said, in many cases, I see decline in GDP because of the introduction of new technology that is just driving people away from the city. There is a city, I'm trying to recall its name. It's just outside of Plattsburgh, outside of New York. It's a city that grew up in the industrial during the Industrial Revolution. After the industry died, they had a lot of empty industry spaces, and they created a taxation benefit for startups to come and work in that city. Now, the advantage that the city had to offer, they were very smart a few years ago, and they have a lot of hydro plants. And they struck a deal with the hydro manufacturing plants to create a sustainable city. And as a result, the people in the city paid one of the lowest electricity fees in all United States. And that was one of their key messages. Like, you don't need to pay so much electricity here. We have cheap infrastructure. We will reduce taxation. Come. After a few months of the industry, you know, startups taking over like the industry, the citizens started to pay one of the highest bills of electricity bills. And they realized that most of the startups that came used the fact that the cities offer cheap electricity to harvest bitcoins. And we all know it's energy monster. And the city GDP went to garbage because of, let's put, you know, cryptocurrency technology in the city. It's politician that doesn't think on the domino effect of things. That's why things happen like that.
You also talked about one of these sort of buzzword data, big data, call it content.
Yes.
And it should be measurable, you said, and have strategic value. Could you explain that? How do you actually create strategic value with data?
What I claim is that data and content that used to be strategic value, they don't hold strategic value today because everyone can do everything. You know, it used to be certain type of companies that produce TV content. And then the cable companies, you know, and then Netflix came into the game. And now every single company that has the ability to generate data can produce TV content. It's Tinder, it's Apple, it's Universal, it's Disney, it's everyone is making TV content right now. So saying you having a streaming service is not a strategic asset anymore because everyone else is having a streaming. And this is transcending to a lot of other places. Look at the boom in the dating apps that exist for the past few years. You know, dating used to have like one or two websites. And today everyone, any developer can build an app. You need $50,000 and you have like hell of a dating site. And then it's like, so what is the strategic value of having a dating content if everyone can do that? You know, if you look about engineering data, which engineering and medical data, which is two very interesting data sets that are used to be held proprietary by engineering and medical institutes. You have so many tools giving to consumers today. Hell, I have infrared cameras attachment to my phone at home that can scan my home for heat leaks and create a heat leak map in real time. In the past, I needed an engineer to come and do that. And now I generate the data myself with an attachment that cost me like, you know, €200. So that engineer lost its strategic value because data is accessible from so many touch points. Companies, organization needs to find new strategic values through the fact that everyone has access to data now. Because it's not held in basements anymore. It's accessible to everyone and anyone can do that. you know, making a film used to be something that is done by professional directors. You're doing a podcast. Look how many people do podcasts and vlogs today. Most people watch podcasts on and vlogs on YouTube. They don't go to traditional TV. So suddenly journalists doesn't have any strategic value anymore. And it's all because data became part of our society. It's not something we observe, it's something that we live in and we are part in. And that was what I was trying to push forward.
Isn't the key problem that you need to understand your data? I mean, everybody can collect data and create data, but how do you actually measure data? How do you understand it?
Well, look at let's talk about biometric data. I have a chip implant and I'm monitoring a lot of my, and I'm going to have an active chip implant probably during end of next year, which is a chip that actively measure. It's not a passive NFC, it's an active measurement chip. I have a smart mulch and other smart devices that measure my data constantly. And then I'm installing and working with a set of algorithms that I can program through a set of very simple interactions to make sense, to help me to make sense of this data. I think the simple thing is how many steps you did, right? How do you measure your, how do you take all of the calculations of all of your biometric during an exercise to show you a very simple graph of progress? It's something that you needed to go to professionals to do before. Today you download an app on your iPhone and it's doing it for you. I think we have all of the mathematics and we have smart developers and we have enough computation powers in the hand of consumers to start making sense of the data. I'm not saying of all data, but of personal contextual data, absolutely. You don't need, you know, professional engineers or doctors or consultants to help you. When people go to the doctor today, they already go with the first diagnosis they did to themselves using a simple tool called Google. That's one of the first changes that you can see. And we're doing it with everything that exists around us. When we go to a shop, we don't ask for help us to choose. We already did the research. We know everything that we want. We quantified the data. We can qualify the data and we can go and buy and we just need help to pay. And that's the shift that is happening with data in the world.
You live in a science fiction world where you gather all this data about yourself, but then you go to the doctor with your data and the doctor does not live in this science fiction world.
Someone did a calculation and they figure out that if a doctor needs to stay updated with all of the changes that are happening in the medical industry, he needs to read 40 hours a week, only read about the changes. And it's absolutely true. There is a big disconnect between certain professions and certain tools. And I think there is a lot of lack of education in many organizations to educate relevant people with, give them the relevant tools in order to get knowledge to do their job better. It is the Fortnite problem. Sometimes it's one-sided, sometimes it's two sides suffers from that. In the end of the day, it's up to me to trust the doctor in front of me that he understands what I'm saying. And he can go and do the research about, you know, the research that I have done and come up with the best solution. I don't think there is a magic word here, except, you know, I always say we should stop competing with technology and start partner with technology. I don't want an AI doctor. I want a doctor that can use AI to better help me. We haven't crossed that line yet. You know, I've been in hospital a few times in my life, and one of the last time I've been there, they took a blood test to do an analysis and they send it to the lab and you wait for like 5 hours because it wasn't an emergency. So you wait for 5 hours in the hospital, but they do have data from years and years of tests. If you just press it through an algorithms that can do the analysis after a few seconds, they reduce so much traffic from the hospital. But suddenly you need money to do that. But we all know that healthcare is not being sponsored to do these things, even so it can reduce a lot of friction. Same thing with traffic jams, same thing with a lot of other frictions that are created due to the lack of right partnership between technology and infrastructure. That creates the Fortnite challenge.
Jeg ved ikke rigtig, hvordan du har det, men jeg synes ikke rigtig, at jeg bor i en science fiction fantasy. Jeg synes faktisk bare, at jeg bor der, hvor jeg boede altid. Og så har jeg fået lidt ekstra legetøj, som måske kan hjælpe mig i dagligdagen. Men basalt set, så er det hele jo faktisk det samme. Jeg linker til Aidromi og hans forskellige projekter. Han er også i gang med en dokumentarfilm om fremtidens arbejdsmarked, som måske kan være inspirerende for nogen at kigge lidt på. I denne her uge, der har jeg også fået et podkort fra Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
De færreste ved, at H.C. Ørsted faktisk prøvede at få H.C. Andersen til at supplere sin sang I Danmark er født med et ekstra vers, der ikke bare hyldede dansk natur og modersmålet. Der skulle også være et vers om alle de store opfindelser, der er gjort af danskere. H.C. Ørsted var digter, farmaceut, fysiker, geolog, naturfilosof, forfatter. Et alsidigt geni, der først og fremmest er kendt for at have opdaget elektromagnetismen. Det er 200 år siden i år, så vi fortæller historien om mennesket, opfinderen, geniet H.C. Ørsted i en særudgave af Transformator i denne uge.
Du har lyttet til Tektopia, som er dit ugentlige fix et eller andet sted mellem teknologi og drømmen om teknologien og så den barske virkelighed. Vi udkommer hver eneste uge, og du kan finde mere på tektopia.dk. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@tektopia.dk. Du kan følge podcasten på Twitter, @tektopia.dk. Så kan du diskutere med en masse andre Tektopia-lyttere i vores backstage-gruppe på Facebook. Den hedder Tektopia Backstage. Og hvis du ikke har fået nok af den her podcast, så kan du også lytte til mit søsterprogram Tektopia på Radio 4, der udkommer hver søndag kl. 13.05, og i øvrigt kan findes som podcast på radio4.dk. I denne uge, der ligger der en måske science fiction relateret podcast på radio4.dk. Den handler om, hvor de selvkørende biler egentlig bliver af, fordi de holder os synlædende i garagen. For når jeg står og kigger ud af vinduet her, så kan jeg faktisk ikke rigtig få øje på en eneste selvkørende bil. Til gengæld er her rigtig, rigtig mange cykler, og nogle af dem er elektriske cykler. Så måske er det de elektriske cykler, der er science fiction fremtiden, og ikke den selvkørende bil. Men det kan du høre i Radio 4's udgave af Tektopia på radio4.dk. På genhør i næste uge. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia.